Hey, what's going on, my qualifiers? Welcome to another episode of Unqualified News with your host, M. Mauricio. That's me. And there's three stories I have for you guys today. The first one is from Bloomberg.com, and it relates to that Concorde supersonic jet plane, basically. I don't know if anybody that's old enough to remember that from the 90s. Well, it was from the 70s, but the last flight was like in 96, of a supersonic jet plane that was, you know, emitting sonic booms everywhere and really bothering people and supposedly breaking windows. But there's a story about that, maybe coming back, obviously better technology, right? So that's there. Then I have a story from routers.com about Aung San Suu Kyi, the leader of Myanmar. You know, the military took over Myanmar because she won on a landslide victory once again, and they're like, wait a minute, this can't be right. So now they're putting a bunch of charges on her. They're suspending all wireless type of internet there. I'll keep doing these Myanmar stories as long as I keep seeing them, because they're definitely not coming up on the news for me. And last but not least, a story from LA Times, and this one made me smile almost all the way through, because California is reopening June 15th, fully reopening. We still gotta wear the mask, but fully reopened June 15th. Alrighty, my qualifiers, then listen up. Let supersonic jets soar once again. This one is from Bloomberg.com by the editorial board. Much of modern life has improved since the 1970s. Not so much for air travel. Getting from New York to London takes roughly as long now as it did in the days of disco. Could that be about to change? Nearly 20 years after the Concorde made its final touchdown, supersonic flight is once again becoming a tantalizing possibility. A handful of enterprising companies are now manufacturing next-generation jets that can exceed the speed of sound and dramatically reduce flight times. Warren Buffett's NetJets just ordered 20 of them from the startup Aireon, at about $120 million apiece. UBS reckons the total market for supersonics could reach $340 billion by 2040. These jets differ from their predecessors in key respects. Improvements in aircraft design, materials science, and engine systems ensure that they'll be lighter, quieter, more efficient, and less polluting. Clever engineering is helping to reduce or eliminate the impact of the sonic booms that they create. Abundant private investments means they should be free of the government meddling that bedeviled the Concorde. Not incidentally, they look awesome. If the business takes off, the benefits could be profound. Supersonics could connect major cities as never before, vastly extend global business networks, boost American competitiveness, and enliven in an industry that has been stagnating for decades. They'll likely cater to corporate clients at first, but the benefits should eventually spread as the pressures of competition and innovation take hold, just as they did for cars, cell phones, and countless of other technologies now taken for granted. Down the road, ultra-fast travel for the masses isn't implausible. Unfortunately, there are impediments to the supersonic dream. One is concern about noise. This led the Federal Aviation Administration to prohibit supersonic flight over land in the U.S. in 1973, and the ban is still in place. It makes the economic case for supersonic jets much weaker. It limits the market size, prevents companies from engaging in trial and error to find the most profitable routes, and eliminates the vast majority of potential business travel. The FAA should replace the ban with a targeted noise standard, a threshold of, say, 90 decibels, or about the same level as the lawnmower or motorcycle, would protect those living beneath the flight paths while still allowing supersonics to flourish. A second issue is atmospheric pollution. Many of the worries raised about supersonic travel, such as risk of the ozone layer, pose less of a threat than once thought. Others, including increased carbon emissions, could be mitigated by technology. Boom Technology Incorporated, for example, plans to fuel its supersonic jets using direct air carbon capture, which would make flights carbon neutral. Other companies are working on variable cycle engines that could significantly boost fuel efficiency. Even so, environmentalists are raising the alarm about supersonics. and could well keep them grounded, just as the anti-Concorde project once did. Although the FAA is clearly rethinking things, in January, it relaxed rules for supersonic test flights. It needs to move faster to ensure that American companies take the lead in this promising new field. In addition to replacing its misguided ban on supersonic flights over land, it should address environmental objections by collecting and publishing impact data from the jets' test flights, and ensuring that all the new supersonic companies comply with international rules for offsetting carbon emissions. Concerns about such powerful technology shouldn't be dismissed, but with the right rules in place, the age of supersonic travel is nothing to fear. It should be welcomed with open arms and open skies. And there you have it, my qualifiers. That's from Bloomberg.com. And I got a little link over here. It says, this is your last free article. Uh-oh, I'm going to have to start paying after this one. So that's from Bloomberg.com. And that's about the supersonic jets. I know 90s babies probably remember that supersonic jet plane, that Concorde, because when I was in school, in elementary school, middle school, I was crazy about that airplane, you know what I mean? Up until obviously it just didn't exist anymore. Even then I was crazy about it because I was like, wow, that is an awesome thing. Like, why are we not doing that? And then the only answer that I found, even then when I was a young kid, was it made too much noise. So, you know, that sonic boom. And it seems like they're trying to mitigate that sound from, you know, I guess killing birds probably is the main thing, right? It was probably fucking up birds pretty bad. But I'm happy to hear that once again, we're gonna maybe be the leader in an industry. Suu Kyi faces new charge under Myanmar's Secrets Act. Wireless internet suspended. This one comes from routers.com by everybody in routers, I guess. Myanmar's deposed leader, Aung San Suu Kyi, has been charged with breaking a colonial-era secrets law, her lawyer said on Thursday, the most serious charge against a veteran opponent military rule. Myanmar has been rocked by protests since the army overthrew Suu Kyi's elected government on February 1st, citing unsubstantiated claims of fraud in a November election that her party swept. In a new measure to stifle communication about the turmoil, the junta ordered internet service providers to shut down wireless broadband services until further notice, several telecom sources said. Suu Kyi and other members of her National League of Democracy, NLD, have been detained since the coup, and the junta had earlier accused her of several minor offenses, including illegally importing 6 handheld radios and breaching coronavirus protocols. Her chief lawyer, King Sang Seo, told Reuters by telephone that Suu Kyi, 3 of her deposed cabinet ministers, and the detained Australian economy advisor, Sean Turnell, were charged a week ago in a Yangon court under the official secrets law, adding he learned of the new charge 2 days ago. A conviction under the law can carry a prison sentence up to 14 years. A spokesman for the junta did not answer telephone calls seeking comment. Suu Kyi, who is 75 years old and won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1991 for her efforts to bring democracy to Myanmar, appeared via video link for a hearing in connection with the earlier charges on Thursday. Another of her lawyers, Ming Ming Su, said she appeared to be in good health. Amai Su and President U Wing Mint are in good health, the lawyer said, referring to Suu Kyi by an affectionate term for mother. The president, a Suu Kyi ally, was also deposed and detained in the coup. He too faces various charges. At least 538 civilians have been killed in protest against the coup, 141 of them on Saturday, the bloodiest day of the unrest according to the Assistance Association for Political Prisoners, AAPP, activist group. Protesters were back out in several places on Thursday and 2 more were killed, according to media reports, as activists burned copies of a military-framed constitution and called for unity among all opposed to army rule. One person was killed and 5 wounded when the security forces fired in the central town of Moniwa, the Moniwa Gazette reported. Security forces also opened fire in the second largest city of Mandalay, killing 1 person, media reported. Shots rang out and black smoke drifted over Myanmar's ancient royal capital. police and spokesman for the military did not answer calls seeking comment. The suspension of wireless internet connections is likely to cripple communications about the protest in a country where very few people have access to fixed line connections. The coup has also triggered new clashes in Myanmar's old wars. At least 20 soldiers were killed and 4 military trucks destroyed in clashes with the Kachin Independence Army, KIA, one of Myanmar's most powerful rebel groups, DVV News reported. Reuters could not immediately verify the reports, and a junta spokesman did not answer calls seeking comment about the clash. Myanmar military aircraft have started bombing positions of another group, the Karen National Union, KNU, for the first time in more than 20 years, and thousands of villagers have fled from their homes, many into Thailand. The army takeover has led to calls for a united opposition among city-based democracy campaigners and ethnic minority forces battling in frontier regions. Ousted members of parliament, mostly Suu Kyi's party, have vowed to set up a federal democracy in a bid to address a long-standing demand for minority groups for autonomy. They also announced the scrapping of the 2008 constitution drawn up by the military that enshrines its controls over politics. The military has long rejected federalism, seeing itself as the central power holding the fractious country together. Social media posts showed copies of the constitution, real and symbolic, being burnt at rallies and in homes. The new day begin here, Dr. Sasa, the international envoy for the ousted parliamentarian, said on Twitter, referring to what for now is not a change that proponents can make. Britain's Next on Thursday joined a growing list of European clothing retailers suspending new production orders with factories in Myanmar in the wake of a coup. And there you have it, my qualifiers. That's from Reuters.com, and that's just an update on what's going on in Myanmar. I was looking at the news. For some reason, I watch the news a lot on my Alexa, and if you say, hey, Alexa, play CBS News, some news come up, video news, so it's easy. So I watch a lot of CBS News, and a lot of it is very, well, you know what you're going to get when you watch CBS News, but they had a small little short clip talking about Myanmar, and it was, honestly, as soon as I saw it, I started counting, and it was less than 10 seconds. I used less than 10 fingers to count how long this clip was. And all they said was, Aung San Suu Kyi faces new charges, wireless internet suspended. That's all, like, literally that's all they said. And then it said, coming up next, we'll tell you about Kim Kardashian's divorce with Kanye West. You know what I'm saying? That's what's happening. That's the type of news we're getting here. But, yeah, man. California aims to fully reopen its economy June 15. This one is from the Los Angeles Times by Luke Money and Taryn Luna. California is aiming to fully reopen its economy June 15. More than a year after the COVID-19 pandemic upended the lives and businesses of millions across the state. Officials emphasize the move hinges on two factors, a sufficient vaccine supply and stable and low hospitalization numbers. There also will not be a full return to pre-pandemic life. Notably, California's mask mandate will remain in place. But officials expressed confidence that the state, through continued improvement in its coronavirus metrics and the steady rollout of vaccines, is now positioned to begin actively planning for what comes after COVID-19. With the expectation of an abundance of doses coming in from the federal government through the end of the month and into May, we can confidently say by June 15 that we can start to open up a business as usual, subject to ongoing mask wearing and ongoing vigilance, Governor Gavin Newsom said during a news conference in San Francisco on Tuesday. So this is a big day. June 15 is expected to be the end of California's current reopening roadmap, which sorts counties into one of four color-coded tiers based on three metrics: coronavirus case rates, adjusted based on the number of tests performed, the rate of positive test results, and a health equity metric intended to ensure that the positive test rate in poor communities is not significantly higher than the county's overall figure. The entire state will move into this phase as a whole. This will not be county by county, Dr. Mark Galli, California's Health and Human Services Secretary, said in a call with reporters. In a statement, officials said those sectors included in the state's reopening blueprint will be allowed to return to usual operations in compliance with Cal OSHA requirements and with common sense public health policies in place, such as required mask wearing, testing, and vaccinations encouraged. Large-scale indoor events such as conventions will be allowed to occur with testing or vaccination verification requirements. Galli emphasized that if we see any concerning rise in our hospitalizations, we will take the necessary precautions. But right now, we are hopeful in what we're seeing as we continue to build on the 20 million vaccines already administered. Though state officials said they will keep a watchful eye on vaccine supply and hospitalizations, including how many fully vaccinated people end up requiring that level of care, they did not establish any hard benchmarks to determine whether California is ready to progress. We don't have a specific number per se on the hospitalizations, but we are looking at impacts on the hospital capacity and delivery systems, ability to continue to deliver routine care, Galli said. On Monday, 1,989 coronavirus positive patients were hospitalized in California, with 493 of them in intensive care. The state hasn't seen numbers that low since last spring. Part of the reason June 15 was chosen as the target date, Galli said, was that it falls 2 months after the state will extend vaccine eligibility to anyone 16 and older. We wanted to be able to provide at least a couple of weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, for individuals interested in getting vaccinated who suddenly become eligible on April 15th to get in line to get their vaccine started, he said. The timeline for full vaccination depends on what type of shot is administered. Galli noted the longest time frame is associated with the Moderna vaccine, which has a 4-week gap between first and second doses. Health officials consider someone to be fully vaccinated 2 weeks after they receive their final dose. To date, providers throughout California have administered 20.3 million total COVID-19 vaccine doses, and 34.2% of residents have received at least one shot, according to data from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Roughly 18.1% of Californians are fully vaccinated. Nationwide, 32.4% of Americans have received at least one dose, and 18.8% are fully vaccinated, CDC data showed. Along with progress on the vaccine front, officials noted that California has one of the lowest coronavirus case rates in the nation, a welcome development as other areas of the country contend with new spikes of the illness. According to data from the CDC, California's last 7-day new case rate of 45.5 per 100,000 people per day is the fourth lowest among all states and significantly below the nationwide rate of 133.8. Climbing case rates have been seen in Michigan with 471 per 100,000 people, New Jersey 335, New York 307.7, the rest of the New York State 248.7, and Pennsylvania 235.4. Among larger states, the comparable rates over the same time period were 171.7 in Florida and 62.3 in Texas. However, Newsom acknowledged that California could have to reapply restrictions if variants of the virus cause cases to significantly increase. This is really a race, these vaccines against the variants, against the mutations, he said. But with continued masking and safety precautions, the governor said he doesn't anticipate California will reverse course. We're always going to be led by data, led by reality and the lived experience on the ground, Newsom said. But our expectation is, if we're vigilant, if we don't spike the ball, if we don't announce mission accomplished and continue to do the good work that we've done, that by June 15th, we'll be beyond that blueprint and we'll be back to a sense of normalcy. A successful statewide reopening in June confers a major political upside for the governor, who faces a likely recall election in the fall. Newsom's chances of surviving a recall could be higher if Californians have resumed some form of pre-COVID-19 life when they cast their ballots. Mass vaccinations and the return of the in-person education are critical to that sense of normality. Newsom was the first governor in the nation to issue a stay-at-home order in the early days of the pandemic last year, an action widely cast as the right call to protect California's fragile healthcare system. The governor hasn't received the same praise for his handling of reopenings. Health experts have said Newsom lifted restrictions too quickly and didn't reinstate them fast enough when case numbers grew, adding to COVID-19 surges in the summer and winter. Gali, one of the state's top health officials, has said he would have slowed the pace of change last summer if he could have done it all over again. Rescinding restrictions and launching a sweeping reopening create new risks for Newsom. If the virus surges again or unexpected problems arise, the whiplash of the governor's constantly changing rules could be fresher in the minds of voters, who may blame him at the polls. Political experts say the more Californians think of the pandemic in the past tense, the more likely Newsom is to keep his seat. The announcement of the targeted reopening date came the same day that California hit its goal of administering 4 million COVID-19 vaccine doses in its most vulnerable communities, a milestone not only in the ongoing struggle to more equitably give out the precious shots, but in the push to further reopen the state's economy, even ahead of June 15. Upon hitting the target, the state redrafted its reopening roadmap to implement new criteria allowing counties to more quickly relax some of the restrictions on businesses and public spaces. The tiers outlined in California's current reopening strategy go from purple, in which coronavirus transmission is considered widespread and indoor businesses operations are severely limited, to red, with fewer restrictions, to orange, with even fewer. The tiers outlined in California's current reopening strategy go from purple, in which coronavirus transmission is considered widespread and indoor businesses operations are severely limited, to red, with fewer restrictions, to orange, with even fewer, and finally yellow, in which most businesses can open indoors with modifications. Before Tuesday, counties had to record fewer than 4.0 new cases per day per 100,000 people to move into orange tier. With the 4 million dose target now achieved, the requirement has been loosened to under 6.0. Under the new criteria, 15 counties, Contra Costa, El Dorado, Humboldt, Imperial, Mendocino, Monterrey, Napa, Riverside, San Benito, San Bernardino, San Diego, Siskiyou, Sonoma, Tulare, and Ventura, officially moved from red to orange tier this week. San Joaquin County has escaped the purple tier, leaving only two counties, Inyo and Merced, still subjected to the state's strictest COVID-19 rules. Even though the state also relaxed the criteria for reaching the most lenient yellow tier to an adjusted daily new case rate of below 2 per 100,000 people, up from the previous requirement of less than 1, only two counties, Alpine and Sierra, have made it that far. All told, 32 of California's 58 counties, representing roughly 80% of the state's population, are now in orange tier, and 22, home to nearly 19% of California's, are in the red tier. Moving into the orange tier has significant economic implications, though counties can always opt to maintain stricter rules in place if they choose. Counties can allow bars, which no longer are required to serve food, to reopen outdoors with some modifications. Amusement parks can reopen at up to 25% capacity, and fan attendance is allowed 33% capacity for outdoor sports and live performances. Bowling alleys, card rooms, and satellite wagering sites also can reopen, each at 25% capacity with certain modifications. Capacity restrictions can also be lifted in stores, although social distancing and other safety modifications still apply. Accommodations can also be increased at house of worship, museums, zoos, and aquariums, restaurants, and movie theaters, and indoor gyms and yoga studios. Offices in non-essential industries can reopen, though the state says workers should still be encouraged to work remotely. The state said goal of administering first 2 million, then 4 million doses in targeted communities, namely those in the lowest quartile of the socioeconomic measurement tool called in the California Healthy Places Index, is one aspect of a wider effort aimed at ensuring equitable access to COVID-19 vaccines. California has for the last month earmarked 40% of its COVID-19 vaccine supply for residents in those disadvantaged areas, an allocation state officials said would not only help address inequities in the inoculation rollout, but make sure the shots are available to those most at risk from the pandemic. And that's from LATimes.com. Local news here in LA, and things are looking up, it seems, right? Definitely restaurants around me are getting busier. I'm hitting record sales, getting much busier. Customers are happier, telling me how much busier they are. So that's a good thing. So June 15th, that's when everybody should go out and celebrate. Plus June 15th is my birthday, so that's a perfect time that I will forever remember this birthday as being, you know, when we were free once again. So there you have my qualifiers. Appreciate you guys for listening in to another episode. I know I got to work on being more consistent, and that's what I'm working on. It's just life right now. It's pretty inconsistent. I'm sure a lot of you guys' lives are on a roller coaster. Or not. If you're not, hey, that's awesome too. You know, like, that's fun too. But again, I appreciate you guys always listening in. Thank you and love you guys. Peace.